Hello everyone, Stan Gill here. Welcome to the Hollywood South Blacklist. This is show number one and was originally recorded on Friday, September 7th, 2012. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send us an email to podcast@thehollywoodsouthblog.com. And be sure to stop by the website to take a look around. Enjoy! Well, hello everybody, Stan Gill here, and this is the Hollywood South Blacklist, where we discuss all things Hollywood South, a filmmaker's paradise. I figured what we would do here on the first show is talk about how this whole Hollywood South concept came about, from the tax incentives all the way back to early filmmaking days back in World War I. If you look at Louisiana as a location for filmmaking, back in the early 1900s, you had films like Faust, The Belle of New Orleans, Tarzan of the Apes is recallable, Evangeline, if you want to call it that, The Buccaneer Jezebel, The Flame in New Orleans, things like that were shot here specifically for the locations and the backdrop, something that you really don't get to see on a Hollywood backlot. Now, as you flash forward, some of the most memorable ones you can think of are, of course, A Streetcar Named Desire, starring Marlon Brando back in 1950. There's King Creole with Elvis, 1958. One of my favorites, Live and Let Die with Roger Moore, 007 film. You have The Drowning Pool, The Big Easy, Belazaire the Cajun was famous. Everybody's All-American with Jessica Lange, shot up at LSU in Baton Rouge. And you have Sex, Lies, and Videotape with James Spader. That was a great indie film. Steel Magnolias, The Pelican Brief, JFK, of course, Interview with the Vampire with Tom Cruise, and other films that started shooting here. But they used specifically Louisiana and New Orleans and other cities for their backdrop, something that they couldn't get on, say, a New York backlot or a Hollywood backlot. To get an idea of how Hollywood South started, you have to go back to, I would say, the mid-90s in Hollywood out in California. Now, there was a production boom. You looked at the next digital revolution coming along, which was DVD in the late 1990s, 1997. And there was also a problem with runaway production. Productions were going to Canada, TV shows, because they could get the dollar, the production dollar, to stretch more. What was happening is the cost of productions were getting out of control and costing more. And producers and studios found a way, if they went to Canada, because of the currency exchange at the time, they could get more bang for their buck. So you started seeing these TV shows being shot there. Well, as time had moved on in the late 1990s, it started to taper out, and production started to come back, but not a lot. And there was this flux period, and I sort of think it happened at the advent of DVD right up to around 9/11, because when 9/11 hit, that basically changed the world forever. What effect that had on Hollywood is that a lot of focus got spent on basically the war effort and trying not to have something like that happen again to America. So Hollywood continued on doing the shows. I remember some films, if I remember correctly, there was a Schwarzenegger film that was supposed to come out literally a month or two after 9/11. So I really don't want to get too lost in the swamp, if you will, talking about world affairs and the economy at that time in the early 2000s and post 9/11. But it did have an effect on the way, in my opinion, on the way films were made. What was happening is the cost of production was skyrocketing. Everything from labor to cost of goods to even security at the studios. You know, now all of a sudden the studios had these walls and security systems and everything, and in my opinion, it just really got to be a hassle to make films here in Los Angeles. That's just my opinion, but that's the way I saw it. You start getting right after 9/11, and you had states that were having problems with their budgets. The economy took a hit, obviously. America took a hit. And I'm not really trying to draw a correlation that were it not for 9/11, Hollywood South would have never been born. What I'm trying to say is that the economy had changed. The economies of states had changed, and they were looking for new ways to bring in revenue. Filmmaking and television shows was one of those ways of doing it. So back in 2002, then State Senator Jay Dardeen and Representative Steve Scalise, Steve Scalise is now Congressman and Jay Dardeen is Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, they got together and started trying to shepherd this whole passage of the Louisiana Motion Picture Incentive Act, which we know today as the film tax incentives. As that started to get passed and go through legislation, it was something new. They were trying to figure out how can they lure production to Louisiana, not only for the backdrop, but try to create an industry here where you would have crew talent and actors and directors and producers and people really be interested in making more and more TV shows and films here in Louisiana. As they started working on it, they finally, you know, hashed it out and got it into law. Well, guess what? As soon as they did that, a lot of other states followed. If I remember correctly, I think New Mexico was the next one on the list. And next thing you know, about 80%, 90% of the states in the United States had some sort of film tax incentive. Now, let's bring that up to around 2005, 6, 7. A lot of those states tried to model it after Louisiana, but for whatever reason it was, call it politics or each state has their own economic problems, they weren't able to make a good go at it. Some of them, after a few years, those individual states' legislatures had repealed their tax incentives. And in fact, some of them even had scandals that happened. Well, guess what? Louisiana wasn't immune to that. So what you were seeing were programs abuse, people trying to abuse the system. Listen, you know, Louisiana got caught up in the same thing. And without getting too deep into the woods, because it's a done deal. The crooks that were involved have already gone to jail, I think may still be in jail. Hopefully, they'll never be involved in the film and television industry in Louisiana again, or much less any other state. There were states that did have their abuses, and each one of them took care of that problem. Now, I'm not saying it was a good thing here in Louisiana to have happened this abuse, but there were two types of abuse. One, there were criminal abuse. There were kickbacks. There were cases where the film commissioner at the time was getting kickbacks. FBI and the IRS got involved and people went to jail. And like I said, I don't want to get too sidetracked on that. That's not the whole point here. Then the other abuse that I saw was the film and tax incentive program had an infrastructure tax credit. And the infrastructure tax credit was designed originally so that people in investors would come to town or investors in Louisiana would invest in infrastructure in the film and television industry. Everything from post houses to sound stages to rental houses, those kinds of things where it would feed into the economy when it comes to film and television. And what happened was that a couple of organizations had put together proposals for the state of Louisiana to look at to say, hey, this is the kind of infrastructure tax credits we want to get. And then it got completely out of control. You had these organizations and these business groups that wanted to build, quote unquote, Seinfeld quotes, motion picture studios. And really what it was they were business ventures, shopping malls that were wrapped in this cloak of film and television tax incentives, and they were going to build some sort of studio or sound stages or something like that. It come to find out, if Louisiana didn't do anything with the law, then they would end up being on the hook for, I would say, at least $500 million in tax credits that they would legally be obligated to hand out. Well, because of those abuses, if you will, and I'm not denigrating or trying to take away from the successes, because there were a few successes with the infrastructure tax credits. But I think what happened was Louisiana went to refocus itself to try to hone and get those tax incentives really rock solid, because at one point there was a fear that they were going to go away. Because of the other states and the corruption that had happened there was this dark cloud hanging over the program. So what happened was the Louisiana legislature went back in and said, let's see if we can fix this. And what they did is they got rid of the infrastructure tax credit. Now, I would have liked to have seen that stay in place. However, I'll be honest with you, as a film and television producer, I couldn't figure out a way to make the law work so that you wouldn't have somebody come in and take advantage of that or abuse it. Come in and build a shopping mall and then throw in a soundstage and say, hey, we're building a Hollywood backlot. On one hand, I think Louisiana did the right thing and got rid of the infrastructure tax credit. Maybe it coming back in the future would be a good thing, but I haven't figured out a solution to that, and I don't think Louisiana's legislature has figured out a solution to that either. But what they did is they went back and started looking at how can we make this program very enticing for producers and even the Hollywood studios to come here and produce projects, but at the same time try to prevent the abuses. So what had happened was, is back in the summer of 2010, they were able to get that done and solidify the program. So now producers can receive a tax credit of up to 30% of the total production budget, which is over $300,000 spent in Louisiana for the qualifying year. And they can also get a labor tax credit, which adds on an additional 5% to Louisiana payroll. So if you hire all your payroll in Louisiana, you can get a 5% credit for that. And for your production spend, your qualified production spend is the key word, you can get 30%. So you can receive up to 35% for anything over $300,000, which is your minimum investment, with no cap. You're going to run into people who are going to argue there's really no gray area. They're going to argue one of two ways. You're going to find people like me that are going to argue the film and television tax incentives are excellent. In fact, I think Louisiana has the best program. They're also a good buy and a good spend for the taxpayers of Louisiana. Now, you're going to find other people on the other side of the fence that are going to say, no, it's a money giveaway. People would spend the money anyway, and now you're just giving away free money. I'm going to put that debate aside for another time because I could sit here for 5 hours talking about the pros and cons and the arguments that have come up for and against the film and television tax incentives. Now, just to let you know, there are other tax incentives. There's a musical performance tax incentive, there's an interactive tax incentive, a live performance, and digital media tax incentives, which are absolutely great for the state. But for Hollywood South, for this show, I'm just going to discuss the film and television tax incentives. One of the things that the studios and independent producers found is that if they come to Louisiana, their number one problem that they had was crew depth, crew talent. Did they have enough cameramen? Were there enough grips? Were there enough hairstylists, makeup artists, production designers, things like that? So a lot of people started coming in from out of state, and I think that's where began the original distrust of people coming in from out of state. Some of the ideas or thoughts tossed around that I had heard were they're coming here to steal the jobs that the tax incentives were designed for us local Louisiana residents. On one hand, I can understand the argument. On the other hand, I can't. But let's put it to you this way. Now we've come all the way up to 2012. Louisiana is the number three production revenue generating state behind New York and California. The gap between number two and number three, between New York and Louisiana, is a pretty substantial gap. We have, from my last calculation, Louisiana has over $1 billion spend coming up for 2012, which means that productions have come to Louisiana, Shreveport, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and the outlying areas, and spent over $1 billion in a production spend. That is people working. Whether those people came from out of state and relocated or whether they lived in Louisiana already, only time is going to tell. And my opinion is, if you continue with these tax incentives, the state continues with the tax incentives, the industry is just going to grow. In fact, I think the problem with Hollywood South right now is it's in such a state of flux that literally it's firefighting. Where in Hollywood, there's an infrastructure. There are numerous production houses, post-production houses, boutiques, companies that cater specifically to film and television and provide those services. Everything from video services to film services, to rental services, things like that. In Louisiana, it's not built up that way yet. It is continually building. There are rental houses popping up. Some of the name players, labs like Photochem are opening up a branch there. Panavision has opened up a branch there. And those companies are seeing the profits that can be made and being able to move their rental houses or their services there, or, you know, not move completely, though some have, and provide a structure, an infrastructure for filmmakers, for producers. Now, the beauty of the film and television tax incentives from a producer's perspective is basically threefold, if you will. Essentially, the state offers three options for the tax credit. For every dollar worth of the tax credit, the easiest and most beneficial way to use it is to offset personal or corporate income taxes. So let's say your investors live in Louisiana and they need an offset for their taxes. Then you can take those tax credits that you get from the state at letter and use those against their taxes. Or what a lot of productions are doing is they're taking one of two things, either a guaranteed check back from the state, or they're shopping the tax credits out on the market. So for instance, let's say that you had $100,000 worth of tax credits coming back to you. Now, I'm not saying that you spent $100,000. What I'm saying is that at the end of the day, once your production goes through qualification and it is certified and you have $100,000 worth of tax credits that you're going to apply for, the state will turn around and just cut you a check for $85,000 right there on the spot. I know it's a little hard to believe, but if you think about it, that's a pretty good investment for a producer and for investors or the executive producers of a film or television series or a project. The other way is to take those tax credits and shop them on the open market. You generally would get a broker and they would go out and divvy them up and say, I have these X amount of people who will pay for these credits and this is how much that I can get. Really what you're talking about is that there's a 15% swing there. So going back to the original $100,000 tax incentives that you get, you do your production and after all the accounting is done and it's certified, you have $100,000 worth of credits. From the state, you can get a check back for $85,000. And sometimes that's a pretty good amount where maybe that pays for insurance, legal fees, pays for interest back on the loans to the investors, things like that. Or you can turn around and take those credits and shop them on the open market, usually with a broker that does that. Maybe get a couple of more pennies on the dollar. Maybe you get 86, 87, 88% back from that $100,000 worth of tax credits. For me as a producer, the way I look at it is that once it's certified, get the check back from the state. Now, I know that there's going to be brokers out there that are going to argue, no, Stan, we can get you a better deal. We can do this. Okay, fine. Fair enough. If that's what you can do, that's what you can do. But for me, I haven't been able to convince myself, or nobody else has been able to convince myself, to take anything other than that tax check back from the state. And besides, there's a good chance that check's not going to bounce. And if you're a producer, you know what I mean. Now let's look at the economic impact for the state. Film and television producers generally are not interested in whether or not there's an economic impact for Louisiana. I understand that. Their main concern is obviously to get their investors' money back and to be successful in whatever the project was, whether it was a television show or a feature film. But generally speaking, for film production, you're going to see an economic impact of about $5.71 for every dollar that's spent. Now, if you look at it, when a production spins in Louisiana, they've got to hire makeup artists, grips, electricians, camera people, you name it. At the same time, they've got to be able to rent cars, put crew members up that have come out from out of state to provide transportation for actors to the set, things like that. Well, they've got to be able to rent that or buy services from local community vendors. Now, the thing is that you may not think of a restaurant as a film and television community vendor, but sometimes at the end of the day, production will go out and they will buy meals from local restaurants. Or on the days off, guess what? The crew wants to go out and partake of New Orleans or the other cities and their local surrounding areas, and they're going to spend money. That's part of the economic impact. So they're being paid and they go out and they take that money and they reinvest it back into the local economies and spend and buy products and services from Louisiana. Now, like I said, you're basically going to find two people, one on each side of the fence. They're going to argue that film and tax incentives are a plus for the state, and you're going to find the other ones that will say film and tax incentives is just a giveaway of taxpayer money. I'm on the side of the fence, and I'm biased where the film and tax incentives are great for the state of Louisiana. Now, one day, there may be an opportunity where these tax incentives will no longer be needed. However, I don't see that happening anything less than 10 years, period. New York has a film and television tax incentive that they're trying to utilize to keep productions from leaving New York right now. And New York gets about $60 billion in a spend, and Louisiana is a long way off from that. So there's an economic impact, and that helps as time has gone on. That has sort of solidified this whole concept, this idea of Hollywood South. Now, some people would argue that Hollywood South expands out to Georgia, Atlanta, Mississippi, somewhere into Florida, things like that. But if you're a little biased like I am, the way Hollywood South to me seems is Louisiana, because that's where the tax incentives and the production crews go. There are three economic centers, if you will, or filmmaking centers in Louisiana. There's Shreveport, there's Baton Rouge, and there's New Orleans. Now, New Orleans takes the lion's share. They take about half of all the production spend in Louisiana. So all the studios, all the independent producers, all the productions coming from all over the world that come to Louisiana to produce their TV and film programs, half of them are going to spend their money in New Orleans, and the rest is divvied up between Baton Rouge and Shreveport. Now, Louisiana, if you think of it and you try to compare it to California, you've got, say, Shreveport is sort of San Francisco, and Baton Rouge is sort of L.A., and New Orleans is sort of San Diego. Now, geographically speaking, there's not a one-to-one ratio there, but it goes to show the distance, if you will, and the trouble it takes to get productions from one city to the other. And when you're a producer, that's one of the things that you're looking at, is being able to get your productions from one city to the other. Are there sound stages there? Where am I going to shoot? Am I going to shoot on location? Sometimes I have to build sets, and I have to have those sets built, and they have to stay there for 6 months, and I have to rent stages, those kinds of things. Now, back when I was talking about the infrastructure tax credits, that would have been a great idea for entrepreneurs to be able to build sound stages and to build infrastructures, everything from a small post house, a boutique house, to sound stages, to rental houses that rent lights and trucks and those kinds of things to provide a service to film and television crews that come to town. And then, like I said before, that infrastructure tax credit has been sunset, and that's no longer available. I hope it comes back in the future, but I think it needs to come back and be reworked, if you will, in a much better way, so that we don't have these kinds of abuses where somebody really wants to build a strip mall and throw a soundstage on the back of it and say, hey, you know, we've got a motion picture studio here. Looking at your film production economic spend, you're looking around $5.70, 5.75 is a return or economic impact for every dollar spent on a production. In 2010 alone, there was about $1 billion in statewide economic output. Essentially, that's how much was spent by these productions coming to Louisiana. Now, I really hope Shreveport and Baton Rouge and New Orleans get to the point where they're all doing just as well. But right now, New Orleans is taking the lion's share. It takes almost approximately 50% of the spend. Now, there's a lot of local economic factors and crew factors have to deal with that in the sense where you have a lot of people who live in New Orleans that want to go to Shreveport and work on productions, but it's a drive up there, and they're being hired as a local, and now they have to turn around and they're paying rent or a mortgage in New Orleans and have to turn around and pay a hotel room or even an apartment in Shreveport. Same thing in Baton Rouge. Now, that's not unique to Louisiana. It's the same thing in California and same thing in New York. Same thing in Canada. They run into the same problems that Louisiana is having with crew talent. Now, the whole idea is to develop the crew talent base in Louisiana with these film and television tax incentives. And as time has gone on, I have basically gotten this one complaint from producers who go to Louisiana and they want to produce a film or television show or movie of the week or whatever. And they say the number one problem that they have is the lack of qualified crew talent, meaning that they, in Los Angeles, if you will, if you're looking for an assistant cameraman or a makeup artist or a hairstylist or a gripper electrician, within about a half hour, they can get 10 people that are highly qualified to do that job. And it just comes down to scheduling and budget, how much is laid out, whether that crew talent can make the entire show, how much they want to charge, things like that. But in Louisiana, since it's a growing state when it comes to the industry or Hollywood South, that was the number one complaint that I got from producers, is that it was difficult. Then they had to turn around and fly qualified people out from Los Angeles. Well, guess what? In my opinion, the pendulum is starting to swing the other way. There are a lot of people that I know out here in Los Angeles that have sold their houses and have moved to Louisiana, specifically New Orleans, and set up there and said, I don't know why I didn't do this sooner, because their houses cost less, the rent is less, the mortgages are less, insurances are less. Now, you do have the problems with the hurricanes and the flooding and things like that, but in California, there's the problem with earthquakes, and you never know when they're going to happen. So there's always an argument in that case. I know a lot of people who are relocating to New Orleans, and they are spending less on things like their housing and cars and insurances, and costs of living generally are lower. And at the same time, the quality of life they seem to have is getting better. I fluctuate from New Orleans to Los Angeles, and I'll be honest with you. I'll go to Los Angeles when the weather really starts getting bad in New Orleans, because I just don't want to deal with it. As a small boy growing up in New Orleans, I had to deal with hurricanes and floodings and things like that, and post-Katrina, having to deal with all that when I flew back to New Orleans to help out in recovery there. I'm just over it. I'm not interested in dealing with it anymore. So when the weather gets bad, yes, I do come out to California and enjoy the weather out here. But at the end of the day, I really think Louisiana has the right combination for the film and television tax incentives to bring productions out there. Plus, you get a better quality of life, in my opinion. Okay, so there's my general overview of how Hollywood South sort of started. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty for producers who want to come to Louisiana, or who are even in Louisiana, maybe move there, and are looking into using the tax incentives. Generally, as a producer, everybody talks about tax incentives. Where can I go? Which state can I shoot in to get the best money, you know, bang for my buck? And I've only got so much money to spend. And I'll be honest with you, in Los Angeles, I still tell people, Louisiana is the place to go. You can go to the other states, but I guarantee you, there's very few scripts that I've read or somebody has pitched me that I said can't be done in Louisiana. I would say, except for one project I'm working on, which specifically has to be set in Hollywood, everything else, I've asked the writers about their scripts, can you rewrite it without drastically changing your story to set in a location in Louisiana? And without a doubt, every single writer said sure. Now, I don't know whether they said sure because I was going to option their project, and they said, yeah, I'll make it happen on Mars. You know, it's a teenage comedy, but it's going to happen on Mars or what. But generally speaking, they're in Louisiana. There are locations and locales that in my opinion, can sub for just about anything when it comes to scripts. Look at it this way. Battle Los Angeles was shot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I remember watching some of the action shots out here in Los Angeles off the Santa Monica Pier where they shot some Marine CH-46 helicopters flying over the ocean. And I can't remember at what point in the movie it happened, but they shot those out here because they needed to get the look of Los Angeles in there. It's called Battle Los Angeles, but they shot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And the reason they did that is because of the tax incentives. There is no other way around that. And guess what? It did put a lot of people to work. It put a lot of crew talent, a lot of actors, a lot of background actors to work. It brought a humongous economic impact to not only Baton Rouge area, but Louisiana as a whole. You're a producer and you want to produce something in Louisiana. You want to take advantage of the motion picture industry development tax credit, which is the official term. Or you just want to, hey, how can I, you know, what do I have to do for the tax incentives? Essentially, you can get a 30% tax credit on qualified motion picture expenditures. That's the key word, qualified motion picture expenditures, with no project or program caps. You can also get an additional 5% for payroll expenditures if you hire qualified Louisiana residents. Now, at the end of the day, you think, oh, what's qualified? You know, do they have to wear a badge? You know, is there, you know, the special hat they have to wear or, you know, a sign that they have to flash? No. Essentially, at the end of the day, the state is going to determine whether you qualify or not for the tax incentives. You may think as a producer, well, how if I go in, what happens if I go in and I spend all this money and do this production and spend $10 million on a very low budget production? And trust me, the way the cost of films and television shows are going today, $10 million is a low budget production. And you spend that money and you turn around and you hope the state qualifies it. Well, if you hire the right people, especially producers that understand the kinds of things that can be qualified and can't. For instance, there was a case in New Orleans where Mardi Gras World, owned by Mr. Mardi Gras himself, Blaine Kern, and his son, had done a documentary, if I recall correctly, and they wanted to get tax incentives for building all these Mardi Gras floats. And at the end of the day, they got approved, if I remember correctly. And then when they went back and started looking at it, the state says, nah, you're not going to get the tax incentives for building a bunch of Mardi Gras floats because you would have built the floats anyway. And they said, well, it's a qualified expenditure. And the state says, no, that's not going to happen. Now, I don't know the outcome of that. There's still whether that's being litigated or not. But the reason I bring that up is because as a producer, you have to be smart. You just can't go in there and say, hey, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars and it's going to be qualified and that's the way it is. Because if you have $10 million of your investors, your executive producer's money, and you're going to go there for this spin and you find out that you can't expense certain things, then you've got a lot of explaining to do, Lucy, to your executive producers. But generally speaking, you're going to get a 30% tax credit on qualified motion picture expenditures. And if you're a producer or you hire a veteran producer that knows what they're doing, they're going to understand what is a motion picture, a qualified motion picture expenditure. And as far as payroll, you get another 5% on top of that. And the key is that the legislature, the people of Louisiana, if you will, want to entice productions to come to Louisiana and make the spins, but they also want local people hired because that money also goes back into the local economy. The incentive being that if you're a local hire, say you're a local camera assistant, and you're able to live there locally and you get hired on a production, then the production will be able to take an additional 5% tax credit. So the effective total credit rate that you can get is 35%. 35% of your qualified motion picture expenditures, okay? Now, the tax credit is fully transferable. Think of it as Vegas. You get this chip, and this chip is worth 35%. And you can transfer it to whoever you want to. And like I said before, you're generally going to do it one of two ways. You're either going to get it to a tax broker, and they're going to go around and divvy that up and get as many people, or maybe even one person, that can take advantage of that tax incentive and get a deduction off of their taxes. It can be a corporation in Louisiana that takes a deduction. It could be the executive producers, which generally speaking is the case. You're going to get a 35% tax credit on your qualified motion picture expenditures. On top of that, there is no annual cap or per project cap on tax credits. Now, there is a threshold. It's a $300,000 threshold. Now, some people may say, especially I get a lot of complaints from lower budget independent producers who want to go out and they want to produce a small documentary, or they want to produce smaller projects, and they're not going to spend $300,000 on that project. Well, here's the beauty of this tax credit system is, let's say, for instance, you're going to spend $100,000 on a documentary or a small project for whatever it happens to be, and that's all you're going to spend. You're going to try to get investors as a producer, and I'm trying to coach this in a producer's hat, wearing a producer's hat. You're going to try to get investors to invest in your project. Well, if they can't take advantage of the tax incentives, then that's not something that you can offer to them, because you're not going to spend over $300,000. But let's say, for instance, you were going to do three projects in a year in Louisiana, and each one had a budget of $100,000. Now, I'm simplifying it a little bit. I would never do just a $100,000 project. I'd do a little bit more to try to get over to the $300,000 limit. I'd hate for them to come back and say, you're a dollar late and a day short, you don't get the tax credit. But you can combine those total expenditures to get over the $300,000 threshold. Now, Hollywood doesn't have that problem when they're coming in and spending $10 million or $150 million on big tentpole projects. That's not the problem. But if you're an independent producer and you feel as though that you're cut out, that's a way that you can get into the program. So instead of maybe doing three or two low-budget features, or a feature that just one, and you're going to come back 3 years from now or whatever it is, 2 years from now, and do another one, and you're not going to spend over $300,000, maybe you're able to structure production in such a way where you can do two. You do each one of them back to back and spend over $300,000. So now we've covered your spends, and then we've also covered the threshold. Essentially, the next step that you have to do, once you've budgeted out your project and you're looking into it, and you're actually getting to the point in time where you've got the money, you've got the backers, and you're going to come in and do the production, you need to apply to the state first. Now, there's an application fee. It's a minimum of $200, a maximum of $5,000. And you may think, $5,000 for a fee? What are you talking about? But essentially, the fee is assessed on 0.2% of the total amount of tax credits for the production qualified. What that really means is that they're going to look at how much money that you had spent that qualified, going back to qualified motion picture spend, and 0.2% of that is going to be the fee to a maximum $5,000, okay? If you're an independent producer, you're going to spend $1,000, $2,000 on a smaller budget production for the application fee. So the next part of the application process is you've got to be able to provide a detailed preliminary budget. And if you're a producer, you know that the budget is going to change at any given moment. You're going to have hot costs when you're on the set, on location, and you're shooting. But at the same time, you're not going to walk in there without a budget at all. So you need a detailed preliminary budget. You need to give the state an idea, the film office, an idea of how the money is going to be spent. Because they can look at it and give you an idea of, you know, where you may run into a problem where, hey, you know, these expenditures aren't going to qualify in the end. We just want to let you know now before you maybe go into this process thinking that several hundred thousand dollars of this spend or several million dollars of this spend are going to apply. That's the reason why they need the preliminary budget. The next thing is that you need a national multi-market distribution plan. Now, I'm quoting, national multi-market distribution plan. That doesn't mean you need a distributor in place. What that essentially means is that you need an idea. You've got to be able to show something that you're going to distribute this project. Now, it could be anything from, let's say you've already pitched the idea, you've got tentative arrangements, letters of intent from distributors, from sales agents, things like that, from different territories around the world. it just means that you've got to have some kind of plan in place. The state really wants to make sure that they're just not giving out these credits for nothing, that there is a bona fide, qualified spin that's going to happen here. And as we all know, as a independent producer, you're going to have a distribution plan, something in place. If you're a studio, you're going to distribute your own product and you're going to have foreign territories already wrapped up, and not a big deal. But if you're an independent, that's going to be pretty tough, but you at least have to have a plan. So the next thing you have is you're going to have a statement that the project meets the definition of a state certified production. Essentially, that you're telling the state, yes, I've gone through it, I'm a producer, and I've gone through the entire budget, I've looked over this entire production, and I believe it meets the definition of state-certified production. Then you have to have that statement notarized. Now, as a sidebar, I've never understood notarization. I understand the legal side of it, and my lawyers all the time tell me, well, you've got to have this notarized and that notarized, and personally, I just think it's a waste of time. You know, at the end of the day, if someone's going to claim that you never signed that contract, you never signed that deal, then they were going to defraud you to begin with. So, putting that aside. And what you're also going to have to do is you're going to have to form a Louisiana LLC and provide a Louisiana tax ID number. Those are pretty simple steps that either you can have your lawyer do or have your production accountant do. Generally speaking, if you're an independent producer, you're going to hire a local attorney, a local firm, whether it's Shreveport, Baton Rouge, or New Orleans, or even you can use I've had cases where I've used my own attorneys out in Los Angeles to take care of it because they already knew how to apply for the tax credits and they knew the paperwork. But that's what you're going to have to set up. And then any other information that the office needs. Essentially, what they want to do is that the Film and Television Office in Baton Rouge, they want to be able to help you get your project done. And there are a bunch of great guys up there. Chris Deli and his crew are great at what they do, and they've been under a tremendous amount of pressure because guess what? The industry is growing exponentially, and I give them all full due credit. So, if they request some information or request, they're not trying to hassle you or get you out of getting your tax credits. What they're trying to do is make your production go smoother. And then lastly, one of the other things that you need to be able to provide the state is you need a notarized statement that the production is agreeing to pay all vendors. Now, there was some abuse where you had productions come in and they would stiff vendors. Now, I'm not saying everybody did that. It's a very small percentage, but the state requires that. At the end of the day, if you're an independent producer, you are managing every penny that you got, and you're going to make sure that all your vendors that you're renting trucks from, you're renting lights from, equipment from, even your crew members, that you're going to pay them and pay them on time. That's just a little side letter that you've got to be able to provide them, and it's just there for prior abuses of the system. It's not really a big deal. It's just a one-page form that you fill out. So to recap, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need your application filled out, and you're going to need your application fee. And like I said, it's a minimum $200 to a maximum $5,000. And the fee is based on 0.2% of the total amount of tax credits for which the production qualified. You'll be able to figure that out. But the best part is that it won't go over $5,000. For lower budget independent producers, I've seen $800,000 to $2,000 kinds of fees. And if that's going to kill you in your production, you're going to have a hard time even applying for these tax incentives anyway. The next thing is you're going to need a detailed preliminary budget. You're going to have a budget anyway. Even though you're going to have hot costs that are going to happen during production, you're going to at least have to have a budget to start off with, and that's the budget you're going to present to the state. You're also going to have a national multi-market distribution plan. The state is essentially looking for, do you have a distribution plan? Do you have an idea where this is going to go? You don't have to have a distribution agreement or deals struck and in place, because sometimes now you're not going to get pre-sales and it's going to be very difficult, and sometimes you can. If you can get pre-sales, great. That step that you have right there is already done for you. But if you're an independent that don't have any pre-sales done already and you're just dealing with a sales agent or you're dealing with distributors who want to look at your product, at least you're going to be able to put that in your distribution plan. Number four, statement that the project meets the definition of a state-certified production. Essentially, it's just another letter that you provide that you, as an independent producer, as a production company, has looked through everything and your project meets the definition of a state-certified production. You're just not willy-nilly just throwing a bunch of numbers up there and hope it sneaks under the radar at the state. You're going to have that notarized also. You're going to form a Louisiana LLC and get a Louisiana tax ID number. Pretty rudimentary processes if you're hiring a local attorney to do all your legal and transactional work, which is, in my opinion, is the best way to go. And then any other information that the office requests, because once you submit the application, they may say, hey, well, you've got this expenditure here. You know, what do you plan on doing that? And like I said, they're not really trying to rip you off or trying to find a way of getting out and giving you tax credits. They're trying to find a way to make sure that you, one, that you're adhering to the law and legally being able to apply and get those tax incentives and tax credits, but they're also trying to help you out and make sure that you don't stumble along the way and inadvertently do something that turns out that doesn't qualify a tax credit because you didn't know. And then the last thing that you're going to have to do is you're going to have to provide a notarized statement that you agree to pay all vendors. Now, it's a little side letter, and I know you may think that it's a pain in the butt, but at the end of the day, it's just another piece of paper that you put in the application package. Listen, if you're going to go through all the trouble of putting together a budget and breaking down a script and scheduling it, these forms are nothing. You fill the forms out and you submit them with the entire package. So, first thing is you're going to fill out the application with the state. You're going to attach an application fee. You'll have a detailed preliminary budget. You'll have a national multi-market distribution plan, a statement, another letter that you're going to provide, you know, put it on your production company letterhead that your project meets the definition of a state-certified production, have it notarized. You're going to have copies of your documents that you're included in your application documents that you have a Louisiana LLC set up with a Louisiana tax ID number, and then any other information that they may ask, and last but not least, the notarized statement agreeing to pay all vendors. Now, I know at first that this may be a lot to bite off when you're an independent producer. When you're a big studio, you just shuffle this off to your legal department, and they take care of all this, and the producer doesn't even see this at all. But if you're an independent producer and you're putting this together, this may be daunting. But let me tell you, at the end of the day, I think it's an absolute best bang for your buck because there's not a lot of paperwork to fill out. You've got most of this information already. You're just having to fill out additional forms and taking a few additional steps. My opinion, my suggestion is that hire a local transactional attorney, whether you're shooting in Shreveport, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, or wherever. Yes, you can hire attorneys in other states. If you're in Los Angeles is your location of your company and you're shooting in Louisiana and you want to use your local attorneys here, that's fine. No problem. But my suggestion is spend that money in Louisiana because guess what? That's a local qualified spend that you're going to get credit on. And let them take care of the paperwork. At the end of the day, if you're going to come back to Louisiana and do other productions, which I see a lot of producers doing, and I've actually seen growth of independent producers who were doing maybe a one-off here and a one-off there, as time has gone on, they've been able to do a lot more productions, hire a lot more people, and build a pretty good business in Louisiana for these film and tax incentives. Now, don't worry if you've missed anything. You can go back over the podcast, but I certainly will have all the links that you need and all the information that you need at the website, thehollywoodsouthblog.com, and you can get the links, the forms, and any information that you need for starting a production in Louisiana and taking advantage of the film and tax incentives. Or let's say you just want to do a little pencil paperwork and figure out, would it be advantageous for your production to shoot in Louisiana instead of, say, some other state and get a better return on your investment for your executive producers and for your business partners. Well, everybody, thanks for joining me on the Hollywood South Blacklist, where we've tried to discuss all things Hollywood South, a filmmaker's paradise. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send us an email to podcast@thehollywoodsouthblog.com and be sure to stop by the website to take a look around. We'll have all the show notes and links we discussed on the show. This is Stan Gill for the Hollywood South Blacklist. Thanks for listening.